Hello, and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, writer Lauren Groff and editor John Stauffer discuss the craft and history of short stories, as well as their latest work, moderated by author and professor Peter Coviello. This program is part of the 2026 American Writers Festival, co-hosted by the American Writers Museum and the Chicago Public Library. The American Writers Festival is a free literary event featuring in-depth conversations with diverse writers from across genres and backgrounds. This conversation took place June 7th, 2026, and was recorded live at the Harold Washington Library Center. We hope you enjoy entering the mind of a writer.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the American Writers Festival. I'm Emily Winter, one of the festival producers, and I'm here to introduce our next program. We're going to talk about the art and craft of the American short story. So, in this program, Lauren Groff is a three-time National Book Award finalist and the New York Times bestselling author of the novels The Monsters of Templeton, Arcadia, Fates and Furies, Matrix, and The Vaster Wilds, and the celebrated short story collections Delicate Edible Birds and Florida. She's won the Short Story Prize and the Joyce Kemp Carol Oates Prize, and has been a finalist for the National Book Critics Circle Award. In 2024, she was named one of Time's 100 Most Influential People, and she's wearing really cute shoes. John Stauffer is the Cates Professor of English at Harvard and the author and co-author of 20 books and 100 articles, including Picturing Frederick Douglass, Giants, The Parallel Lives of Frederick Douglass, and Abraham Lincoln, Battle Hymn of the Republic, and Black Hearts of Men. His two-volume, The American Short Story, The 19th Century, was published in January 2026 with Library of the Americas. And I haven't checked his shoes. They'll be interviewed by Peter Coviello, professor and head of English at the University of Illinois, Chicago. Please join me in welcoming them to the stage.
Hi, everyone. You're here inside instead of being outside in the glorious day. Thank you.
John, you're...
Hello.
There we are.
Okay. All right, well, thank you all. Thank you all very much for coming. I welcome you, and I especially welcome our speakers to the great and glorious city of Chicago on this great and glorious Sunday. My name is Pete, and we're going to talk a little bit today about the short story. Now, as perhaps you know, there's a lot of sideways talk about the short story, you know what I mean? Like whether it's you know, Faulkner said something like, well, I became a novelist because I failed as a short story writer, but I failed as a short story writer because I failed as a poet. And or Laurie Moore says something like, in a more equivocal tone, that a short story is a love affair, but a novel is a marriage. Today we don't have to buy any of those things. I think we're gonna decline any of those ways of taking up short fiction. We have two people who are gonna speak to us rather about its own terms, and we're going to think about it in the grain of its own pleasures and challenges and intensities and rewards. So let's start, if we could. The short story, as many of you know, well, has a long and twisting and fantastically varied parentage. And this is, Lauren, your third book of short fiction, which in the sequence of publication at least comes on the heels of two novels. So my first question is, was there something about that parentage, stories you particularly admired, or modes you particularly admired, that drew you back to the form this time around for this book?
Yes. So I am a writer of short fiction because I am a failed poet.
Oh my God, Faulkner was right.
It's 100% true. I still write it, but it's not good. So I actually think that the brain that I use to write short fiction is so much closer to the brain that I use to write poetry than it is to write novels. They're so radically different in form, in the way that I approach them, in the way that I love them, in the way that they come to me, that they're just a different genre. I actually don't even think that they're short stories. I mean, they are literally prose, but they don't feel like prose to me. And the reason that I love short stories so much is because really they are, it's almost as though you're possessed by them. And it's not that you're not possessed by novels, but that's a 5-year commitment, right? That's a really long, you know, slow burn. But the short story for me is something that descends into me. I don't write it immediately. I let it sit for a long time, years and years and years. And then one day there's a collision, right? You're reading something, you're experiencing something. Once I was walking behind my toddler son, and I was looking through his eyes, and I was watching like the ducks, which are giant like dinosaurs, and then I look up and I see the structure of my short story in a double seesaw, right? So it's like it's something from the outside world comes and attacks this original idea and becomes so urgent that's all you have to do. All I have to do is write it, right? And I write it in one go from beginning to end because you want to surf that energy in. You can't do that with a novel. It's just not impossible. So they're radically different forms for me. And that's why I love doing them because it's, you know, it's just changing it up a lot.
That's amazing. Always is, or close enough to always, it's one go through a...
For the first draft. I write many drafts, and I don't reread my... Because I write everything longhand, and I can't read my own handwriting. So it's just this wonderful thing where I have to get it out on the page, and then it's sort of being built in the imagination.
Yeah, that is fantastic. This leads me, John, if I may, to a follow-up question for you. John, who with these volumes, as you'll... see here.
Exquisitely beautiful.
Exquisitely beautiful volumes from the Library of America. A person who knows more than most anybody about the expansive historical backstory and also the very, very mixed parentage of the short story. I would wonder if you could speak some to what are for you just some of the chief features of the emergence of the short story and why also the 19th century, which you and I share. I would like to say that John and I know each other from the 19th century as professors of 19th century literature. What the 19th century has to do with that?
A lot. So the American short story really emerges in the 19th century. There are some short stories in the 18th century, but not as many. United States, American short stories flourished more than any other country, in part because literacy rates in the United States were higher than other countries, in part because of Puritans and religious tradition required people to become literate. And if you don't have a high literacy rate, you're not going to be able to sell many short stories. So that's a large aspect. Another is the rise of common schools, also unusual, if not unique, in the United States. And in public schools, every school kid learned how to read and write. So those are two major distinctions of the American short story. There's also a distinction between the free states and the slave states throughout the 19th century and even after Civil War, and that is the literacy rates in the free states were far higher than they were in the slave states. The best way to understand the slave South is that it's a feudal society. It's a feudal society, and planters, enslaved people were the most profitable form of wealth for in the South. And in the North, it was artisans. It was an artisanal ideal, and part of that artisanship was being a writer. And so whether you were a blacksmith or a tanner or a cooper, a large number of people wrote short stories. Most of them didn't get published. But it also coincides with the rise of the newspaper. And short stories were first disseminated in newspapers. And that was early on in the 19th century. Newspapers recognized that they can sell more copies if there's an interesting, fascinating short story along with the news. And so they distinguish between, okay, this is a short story, not nonfiction, not news. And that was hugely popular as well. So those are the ways in which the American short story proliferated so much in the United States. In the United States, short story writers, and Edgar Allan Poe was probably the leading theorist of the short story, and he actually published a document for aspiring short story writers saying these are the framework for publishing good short stories. And one of them is that the short story is designed to be read in one sitting. That's the most important one. And because you don't want, you know, a 150-page book that passes as a short story. That was a major one. And it was because of that, in a short story, there are one or two major characters, and you can't have that many characters in the way that you can in the novel. And so there are limits of what you can do, but within those limits, the beauty and the power of the character, of the setting, etc., can be more rewarding than in, say, a novel.
John, that's fantastic. And that, Lauren, that makes me want to ask you, I think part of what's, what you can hear in what John is saying, that the story has so many different precursors.
Yeah.
Some of them are in the newspaper, some of them are realist, of course, some of them are parable, some of them are biblical. Anyone who's read Lauren's work knows that those precursors are spark with life in your story. So I was wondering if you could speak some about what, for you, you mentioned a little before, are the particular affordances of the story. That's to say, like, what do you think you can do in that you couldn't do in the poetry that you will publish eventually, or in the novel that you write.
You can do anything in the short story. That's why it's such a glorious form. And you know, the people who really, really love the short story do know, you know, Aesop's Fables. They know the Decameron, right? They know all of the precursors. They know Guy de Maupassant, who of course was very famous for having written a short story every single day for his newspaper in France, right? Yeah. I mean, you do know, like, the deep, bone deep structure upon which the entire form is built. And then you know, like, Chekhov, who's basically the spark of the original, basically what we think of as the American short story pretty much can be traced back to Chekhov, right? It
very much so.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, most writers, it's in the 20th century where they started to read deeply into Chekhov in translation.
But even now, Alice Munro, who's probably, despite the fact that she's very problematic personally, she spoke back into Chekhov, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's always a conversation
huge
back.
Numbers.
Huge,
in fact, most creative writers today, look, I mean, they know their Chekhov.
I go back to Chekhov every year. Yeah, I love him so much, right? So the thing about the short story is that it's a form that is not delimited by anything, right? Other than size, right? So it's hard to know what a short story is because you can only say what it's not, and it's not a novel, right? Other than that, it's everything else.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that does make me want to, that makes me want to ask from the reverse. So like, what is the thing that in the novel that you will act, you couldn't do that in a short story? Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, like you said, having, you know, the reams and reams, the Tolstoyan, families, that's really hard to do. I do think a short story can often be characterized by being an eruption in time as opposed to a lifetime. Then again, I've written myself short stories that have taken place over the course of a lifetime. But if you look at them, the ones that came, I was the editor for both O. Henry Prize and Best American Short Stories, and it's usually the story that you get is a volcanic eruption in time. That's what the story is. It's a moment that sort of puts the entire life into focus, right?
Yeah.
So that is the general description, but then again, all over the place, every single day, you have people doing the opposite of that as well.
Yeah, that's a wonderful metaphor, volcanic eruption.
I mean, John, what do you, having surveyed the short story over more than a century in its great period of nascence, what do you take to be the chief features, formal, thematic, the chief elements of which the story has been built in the archive that you've assembled here?
So one is these collections in virtually every short story I've read, it begins in media res. It begins in the middle of things, in ways in which in the 19th century most novels, the novelists had to frame everything first. And that that provides the hook. That provides the hook. And then the great short stories are ones in which the narrative momentum continues to build. And that narrative momentum coupled with the hook opening is one of the things that really made the short story so popular in the United States, especially, as I said, in the Free States, in the North, yeah. Virtually every newspaper beginning in 1808, and actually even in 1800, but newspapers regularly published short stories. And in fact, there was a newspaper called the Story Paper. So it was a newspaper that was simply filled with short stories. Hugely popular.
You should bring that back.
Yeah, exactly. If there's any fundraisers in the
because the
room.
Because papers are still cheap today. Yeah, that would be a terrific thing to do, is to bring it back.
Yeah. Do it.
I mean, well, I wonder if either of you or both of you would talk about one thing that's striking about the short story, following from what you've said about finding in Medias. What do you think is the distinctness of the technologies of character that happen in short stories? You know what I mean? That is to say, like, as readers, there are characters in novels that we can call to mind and think we've spent a lot of our lives with, and we know where they are now, and they live within us. But one can say the same thing about a variety of short fiction characters who we've spent comparatively little time with. And I'm wondering, both formally and compositionally, how you think about just technologies of character in the span of the short story as it is differentiated from the novel, say.
Oh, that's such a hard question. You know, I don't even know, because I actually think that it gets confusing for some readers. So in some of my books that came out, Florida, when my story collections came out without short stories on the cover, so people who didn't know that it was a collection of short stories got really angry, because they were like, these characters change from chapter to chapter.
I mean, it is very enraging, Laura.
What is happening? They never come back. There are these plot holes. Like, nobody, what's going on, right? And I get these hate mail. So I do think, you know, if there's a small technology that can happen, it's that I think in the short story, there's a lot of leeway for the ambiguous ending, or the sort of the untied up ending, the ending that can be fragmented into multiple colors in multiple directions. That can happen in the novel. But also, I would say, and tell me if I'm wrong, because you know more than I do about this, but the short story, I do think, is written in a minor chord, whereas the novel is written in a major chord, right? And so I think that if you look at the characters in terms of musicality, in terms of minor chord versus major chord, you can actually see the technology of the character changing.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. And in the short story, there are far fewer characters than there are in a novel. A lot of novels in the 19th century and even today, there are minor characters that just appear once or twice. And so the author has a reason for including them, but there's no sense of any kind of interiority in the way there is in a short story. In the short story, there's, by the time you finish a good short story, you're familiar with each character, and each character is unique. Each character has his or her own voice, own sensibility, own understanding of the world. And within a short story, the differences between the two people's, two characters' understanding of the world is what drives the story.
John, that's great. That I particularly like that. It makes me think of the difference between, like, the hectic Dickensian world where there's 45,000 characters, and many of them are indelible in a certain way without being, like, fully fledged realist characters. Yes, like Guppy is not a guy I'm going to have a drink with.
Yes,
whereas in
yes.
the short story, I hear you saying that yes. everyone crystallizes in some way.
There's a certain...
Everyone crystallizes, but unlike a novel, the main character in a novel, the level of nuance, you have more time to develop that nuance, that distinguished nature of... Ahab.
Yeah. Just as with the prose, every sentence, every phrase has to justify its place in the short story.
Yes.
Every character has to justify its place in the short story, or else it'll feel
loose,
or it'll make the tautness of the drum of the short story too loose to actually resound.
Yeah, I agree completely.
That's very nicely said, and it makes me want to just ask briefly, is that part of what you mean, whether the poetry and the short fiction are close to you because they're, the economy demands a certain pressure of communication at every sentence you turn and every point of view you choose or every kind of mediation you involve?
Yeah, that's the largest part of it. But also, I would say, you know, when I was writing a lot of poetry, I still write poetry, but it's not good. I really loved formal poetry. And I love formal poetry because the phrase that you choose, right, the way that you use language reflects back the larger structure of the form. And the form suggests things that are maybe not visible to your conscious brain, right? So the form requires a certain element that you're not even, you don't know until the story is completed. So I like short stories too because the form has to be correct in order for the story to be successful, right? You have to have chosen the right way of telling the story that matches the story. Frank Lloyd Wright has this amazing quote, "Form follows function that has been misunderstood. Form and function should be one joined in spiritual union," right? And that's what I think about the short story. It's not this, I mean, the novel also, but the novel can be a Henry Jamesian loose baggy monster, right? There can be things in it that don't necessarily, aren't urgent to the form. The form of the short story, when I do not succeed in telling a short story, it's because I have chosen the wrong form for the story. And the story could be clear, the characters can be clear, but formally it's false. So I have to wait until the correct form shows up.
That's right. I completely agree with that. That's great.
John, do you think, this makes me want to ask, before I have another set of questions I want to ask you, but it makes me want to ask something that just occurred to me. The 19th century, of course, a famous high watermark, much mourned by 20th and 21st century poets. Like, people don't read poetry in the same way. What for you are the relations between the, say, public spheres of poetry, which was also widely and publicly consumed, and what you've been describing to us as the voracious public for short fiction?
It's a great
fiction?
Question. So in poetry, there's both in the 19th century, 20th century, 21st century, there are rigid rules within poetry. There are different types of poetry, so many words per line, et cetera, and there are a number of different, I mean, that's been broken down. But I would say the best way to summarize both poetry and the short story is that great short stories and great poetry, there's a musicality to it. And in fact, for decades, when I came across a short story or a novel that is, or parts of a novel, I read out loud and you hear the music and there is a musicality to it. And each different short story, each different novel will have, if you start orating it out loud and listening to the music, so to speak, it's extraordinary. And it contributes to the plot, it contributes to the characterization, contributes to the setting. There's a kind of almost supernatural aspect that a short story can provide in that respect.
An incantation. Now we get to the most fun part, which is sort of book nerds. So, Lauren, you just wrote this book of short stories. Who are the short story writers or the particular short stories that either inspired you or moved you, or was there a short story you remember reading and being like, damn, like I wish I could have turned that sort of thing from the 19th century to yesterday, you know, and you've just edited the thing, so you've had a lot of short fiction come at you. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I am a deep lover of all short fiction, even, you know, O. Henry, which was my first exposure to the form. I mean, it's rightfully seen as kind of schlocky, which is 100% true, but I still love him. In Cooperstown, New York, where I grew up, we had this wonderful library, not like this one, I mean, it's much smaller. And they had the library sale, and I would go and for 10 cents, like, pick up armfuls of books, and I picked up the entirety of O. Henry's short stories, Silverfish. And I was like, this is an amazing form, right? I had never, ever read that. And then I went to college and couldn't get into any poetry classes, and so I took a short fiction.
The bad shadow of poetry.
I know. And And like suddenly, like the clouds parted, angels started singing. I was reading Grace Paley. I was reading Laurie Moore. I was reading Alice Munro. I was reading Toting Kate Bombaro, whom I am trying to bring back into the public eye because she was amazing. Toni Morrison was her editor. She's incredible. I was reading Chekhov. I was, you know, everyone. Nowadays, you know, I love so many people who write short fiction. I think Danielle Evans is one of the greats. I love George Saunders. There are too many. I'm going to forget someone and offend them by not mentioning their names.
Obviously, this is a trap. Obviously,
I know this is such a trap. There's so many great practitioners of the short story out there, and I also really, really love people who do not feel the pressure to write novels as well. I find that's. I mean, that's hard to resist the pressure to write novels as well, because that's the only way you get paid. But the people who are like short story purists, I find that so compelling and beautiful and shocking.
Interesting. I want to ask just a little follow-up. But do you find that because of the contraction of many marketplaces, but the literary marketplace is certainly one of them, do you think that's rarer now than it would have been 40 or 50 years ago, that Grace Paley, for instance, could live a life of making short stories, or
Alice Munro?
Yeah. Alice Munro certainly has come to mind. Do you think that's...
It's almost gone, right? I actually, any time a short story collection comes into the world, it's a source of rejoicing, because it's incredibly hard to publish them or to justify the publication unless you have an editor who loves the heck out of them, right? And is ready to fight for you. Even
if it's a collection of short stories like your brilliant one that just came out, I mean, each short story in that collection is magnificent. And in a sense, I mean, a follow-up is the degree to which can you see it as a kind of modernist or proto-modernist collection, book or collection. There's a relationship, I at least read, within the various stories in terms of...
Oh yeah, that's intentional.
Yes, that was my sense.
Yeah, I think really great writers of the short story that I love very much have a sense of creation or collation with a larger story in mind, right? It's almost like making a mixtape where you're trying to seduce people.
Yes.
Remember in the 90s, we would make these and you like give them to your crush and you're like, it was like a story that you had built. That's what you're trying to do with this. But I do think, you know, if you're not, you know, I have been lucky to be published in the New Yorker. That's why I think they were okay with publishing the collection. Seven of the stories were in the New Yorker. It's really, really hard to put out a short story collection if you've been published in small journals. Not impossible, but very, very hard. So I have to say, this is not something that people are like eager to do.
Right.
But I think it's really, really important for the literary ecosystem that they exist.
Yeah, that's too bad. So it's almost there's a certain prejudice against.
Do you find there's a developmental is not the word I want, and yet there it is. What do you think about the short story as a place where one might learn to find one's voice as a writer?
It's immense, and it happens, and I'm sure there are lots of MFA people in the room who trained on short stories in particular. I mean, I think this is why the United States is still at the forefront of short story writing. I mean, I was just in France. They call them nouvelles there, and they're like, what is this like collection of nouvelles? I don't understand, right? I don't understand. And I was just like, I know, right? Like, you know, and then I would call back, you know, Guy de Maupassant. I would call back, you know, Boulesuif, right? And like try to tell them, like, you have a history of this also. But, you know, the truth is, in the U.S., it is the place where a lot of people do learn, and I love that for us, right? Because you can write a short story, experiment, put it to the side, come back to it years later. The first story in this collection, The Wind, I wrote over the course of 30 years, right? I just couldn't find the form that was the correct form for that story. I couldn't find the container to hold it. So you can come back, and you can pick it up again. It's never wasted. So I think we are actually probably among the best in terms of putting out really radical, amazing new short stories. And so I think that we should celebrate that.
John, before we get into the reading portion of today, I wonder if you could talk some about your sense of the relation of this tremendous archive of American fiction of American short fiction to our other ways of like taxonomizing literature, that is to say, modernism, which would be American, European, you know what I mean? Because this is a particularly an exacting account of short fiction in America.
That's a great question. I would say that the short story, the genre of the short story, in many respects transcends that traditional understanding of is it romanticism, is it realism, etc., the categories in which scholars define the term. The short story can transcend that. So is it, what is this? And many of the short stories, you can't say this is a, many of the different forms. Mm-hmm. You read it for its own sake. And as I said, and I think you mentioned this, is that a short story, if it's not almost perfect, if there's a bounce or if there's a clunkiness, it affects the entire short story in a way that even a novella and a novel can, I mean, most of us who even novels that we love, there are parts of it that's like, this is it's hard going.
Moby Dick is my favorite book on the planet, and the whole Scientology chapter is crazy.
Oh, stop it,
Gordon. I love it
as
so much.
As an American guy, you're killing me.
No,
so
I love it. It's the best.
Oh, okay. Right. No, you're going to be like, yes. You get kids in class like, yes. Professor, this book was funny for a while, and then you start talking about whales.
Yes.
No, that's the best part of it.
No, you could teach these classes instead of me. Like, it's funny. Part of what I'm hearing often when people talk about novels, particularly people who are academics, and they're making a defense of the novel,
yes.
It goes like this. The novel is when literature sort of peaked. It was struggling to find other things, and then it found the novel, and it was the perfect form, particularly in the 19th century, between George Eliot and Melville, because it can contain everything. Right? It's the encyclopedic move. But what I hear the both of you saying, as people who both thought about it and written, is that actually the short story is, in odd ways, the more elastic.
Yes, very much so.
Form. I wonder, before we read, if you talk some about where that elasticity takes you. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm particularly interested in, like, you say you write it in one berth, which is different from the slog and the labor of a novel. Inside it, does that, can you feel that elasticity in the making of the thing? Do you know what I mean?
I think they're equally elastic in different ways, right? So I think that the novel can contain everything. It can contain a chapter on whales, right? I mean, it can contain anything. I think the short story has different needs, but again, we have someone like Bartholomew writing stories at the same time as you've got someone like Grace Paley writing stories at the same time you have a really hyper traditionalist short stories. So like the form can be anything you want, like a poem, right? A poem can be anything that you want, and a novel cannot. A novel is a novel, right? Now, what defines a novel? That is a whole other semantic discussion that we're not going to get into today, right? Like, oh my God, we do not have time. So I'm just saying that, and on to you, John, because you can.
So, to go back to Melville, Melville after the Moby Dick did not sell well at all. It was considered a complete flop. And Melville himself recognized its brilliance. It was really hard. I mean, he's trying to make a living as a writer. He doesn't come from money. And following Moby Dick, where there were some vigorous attacks on the novel, and he started writing short stories. The short stories he wrote are as good as Moby Dick in their own way. And he became a short story writer because he recognized that he could be very creative. Bartleby the Scrivener. I mean, brilliant short story that no one had written about at all. I mean, it's open-ended. It's, there are countless, virtually everyone who reads Bartleby the Scrivener has his or her own interpretation of it, which is part of the brilliance of Melville. And so he recognized that a book like Moby Dick was not going to attract the people that he hoped, that he thought would appreciate. And it wasn't until the 19th or the 20th century that Moby Dick started to become a canonical work.
The thing that we think it is today. Well, with that, John, I wonder if, this is an unkind thing to ask, but would you select from the many stories that are archived here, one of what particularly moved you or particularly grabbed you, and maybe read us a bit from one of those short fictions, because I'd like to end our togetherness today with the voice of some short stories in the air.
So Bartleby the Scrivener is an absolute master.
It's a banger, yeah.
It is an absolute
Everybody knows.
And I mean, there are a number of reasons why that is, but one of them is that probably every person in this room, there's a kind of Bartleby in him or her. And in terms of he's a scrivener, he's immensely efficient and accomplished as a scrivener, clearly loves literature, and he ends up, how many of you have not read it? If you haven't, I will keep that from you.
Oh, so they save you from spoilers. Yeah.
That's.
I prefer not to.
That's one. Let's see. I wrote down a couple others that. I mean, I will say virtually every story in these two collections, I go back and forth of which one I like. Hamlin Garland's. The Return of a Private. He's one of the great short story writers of the Civil War era. It's really powerful. It's really powerful, and he captures the bloodshed and the horror of the war in a way that no other writer at the time does. Frank Stockton, who the Lady or the Tiger is a stunning, and that's, I hadn't read that before, and John Kolka, who's with the Library of America, he gave me all these stories to read, and this, it blew me away. It's 19th century looking back at ancient Rome. And it's about the Roman response to a disloyalist, essentially, and with a love affair involved, which is it's brilliantly done. Sadakichi Hartman, who was a Japanese as well as a number of different ethnic traditions. He wrote a series of short stories and called Critical Moments, and one of them is the Critical Moments is when the doctor goes in, a fairly young MD goes in to try to cure a young child, did not do well in med school, had just ignored a lot of his work in med school. Ends up the child dying because of his ignorance of what's happening, and the ending is just extraordinary. It's done in 8 pages. It's extraordinary. A number of African American writers. I've written more on Frederick Douglass than any other figure, and Douglass's novella, which is based on an actual mutiny, is superb. And Charles Chestnut, early 20th century, late 19th century. Chestnut is still one of the most underappreciated short story writers.
Conjure Tales.
Yeah.
Run out to your local bookstore. Yeah. Well, with a few minutes left, Lauren, I wonder if you might play us out, as they say, and select what are something from your own volume that speaks to you and might speak to us.
So I'm not going to say that all the stories in this are bummers, but some of them are. So I'm going to read you the beginning of a story that's not a bummer. It's called Annunciation. It's the last story. Some nights in my dreams, I find myself running through those hills above Palo Alto again. It is always just before dawn, and as I run, I smell the sun-crisped fields, the sage, the eucalyptus. The mist falls in starched sheets over the distant hills, the ones that press against the bay, and I can hear nothing but my own footsteps, my own breath. Once in a while, a peloton of cyclists whirring out of the morning fog that swallows them up again. I descend, going ever faster through the quiet, wealthy neighborhoods, across the empty black river of asphalt that is El Camino Real. Then, when the road flattens out into mountain view, I am flying, and I see at last the great strong-armed oak that spreads its grace above the whole block. Every time, though, I awaken before I can lift my eyes to the converted pool house, covered in moss and bougainvillea and ferns, which I have not seen in 20 years, and which I won't see again in this life. My parents didn't come to my college graduation. Instead, they sent a dozen carnations dyed blue and a gift certificate to a clothing store for middle-aged women. I would give my left foot to be there, my mother had said, near tears on the phone. But her voice was drowned out by my sisters screaming at one another, the dog barking, and when she put the phone down to stop the ruckus, she got distracted and never came back. It is true that one of my sisters had a dance performance that same weekend, another had a soccer match, and another had final exams, and even if these things had been deemed of less importance than the eldest child's college graduation, my two brothers, who were still in high school, could not be trusted to resist having a party in a house vacant of parents. This was why, after walking across the stage and tossing the mortarboard and hugging my friends, I came back alone to my dorm room, dodging my roommates' families who were loading all their stuff into cars. I closed the door and looked for a long while at my own neatly packed boxes, the stripped mattress. I took my toiletries, Moby Dick, from the box of books, a sleeping bag, a pillow, a hiking backpack full of clothes, and slipped out, leaving everything else behind. I didn't say goodbye. I told no one where I was going. I didn't know until I was outside in the softly setting New England sun that I was turning toward the west. Okay, I'm gonna end there. Okay, thank you.
Do you have your watch on?
Oh. Yeah, can I read it?
Yeah, read a little bit. John, we're gonna have, John is going to read us a little bit. From
so this is the end. Edith Wharton is one of the, I include a couple stories from Edith Wharton, who I think is also just stunning. And this is the end of a short story. It's a story in which we don't know the name of the husband and the wife. The husband is much older, so she's married. She married when she was younger. The husband was much older. They're on a train together. He's had he's had physical health issues. He collapses with a heart attack in the train, dies in the train as they're reaching their destination. The porter asks, "We'd better get him up now, hadn't we?" Touching her arm. He had her husband's hat in his hand and was meditatively revolving it under his brush. She looked at the hat and tried to speak, but suddenly the car grew dark. She flung up her arms, struggling to catch at something, and fell face downward, striking her head against the dead man's berth.
Well, now I feel I have to say at least one or two more words. Which are basically this, friends and fellow Chicagoans, please join me in thanking our out-of-town guests for coming. And I think we would all like to thank you for coming here to be with us today on such a beautiful day. I'm glad that we talked about Tony K. Mbabara, Edith Wharton, Grace Paley, and the both of you, Lauren Groff, John Stauffer. These books are available to purchase, I believe. So again, join me in thanking our guests. Thank you as well.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode from the American Writers Museum Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe so you are notified when new episodes are released. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.